Hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Latin Babbler Show. We just had a great show called Latinx Owned Businesses, and everybody seemed to have loved that one, where we talked about a lot of the percentages of the way Latinos are growing in our financial section of the United States. Today, I'm being joined by Ms. Rocky. Sound it off.
What's up, me gente? Thanks for joining in once again.
Our producer, Bree, is joining us.
Hey, everyone. What's up?
And one of our new members of the creative team, Megan.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
All right. So we actually really excited because we're growing. So we are on our way to have 5,000 listens. And this week, we had about five people join our passion project as part of our creative team.
Amazing.
So I want to introduce some of these amazing people. So the first person who joined us was Sarah Romaine Zigma, who you guys remember was part of our guest, or was our special guest for the creator or for the Ecuador episode. And she's going to be joining us as a sub co-host. Then we have Nicole, who you'll hear from a little bit later. Nicole Antoinette Urbina Ruiz. Try saying that fast four times. She's into political science. She's a student and she wants to focus on immigration. So tonight's episode is special because we will be talking about immigration and she will be joining us later in the show. We also have Sofia Escalante, who, if you haven't heard yet, does our amazing poetry that we've been showcasing for the last month. And Jennifer Hernandez, who's doing life and culture. She's been a listener to the show and wanted to help culture. She's got two amazing daughters. We're really happy to have her. And we just introduced her, Megan Vasquez, going to be doing health and fitness. As you know, she is with us here on the show. So, Megan, give a shout out as to what you're going to be doing for.
Hi, guys. So, yeah, I'm going to be doing some new challenges on the Instagram and Facebook. I'm going to be doing some articles on the website, you know, going through fitness and different workouts and different meals and how to get healthy and just feel just better.
I feel like that's going to be important for a lot of Latinos.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, definitely.
Ms. Rocket, you've been putting some work. I see those Instagrams.
Listen, oh my God, I'm trying to get like Megan, okay? She's out there working it. So yeah, I've been losing some weight. I have a personal trainer, eating better. I feel amazing. It's just, you know, it's a lifestyle change. So you just got to stay committed to it. So I'm happy. It was about time.
I know, I'm trying to. So I've lost about 18 to 20 pounds. It's been a struggle because we moved.
Awesome.
We're doing all kinds of stuff, doing renovations. Now we're about to go see a wedding. So, I mean, it's been really difficult. But for the most part, I mean, we're trying to do the best we can. We just started doing the 100-day challenge.
Right.
And that's actually been kind of funny. If you've seen us on Instagram, you'll catch us there. So that is something we encourage everybody to do. If you're sitting there trying to figure out what kind of challenges to do, start with that one. And then we'll hit you up with another one later on in the show. But let's get going. Something Latino. We got to show off something Latino because a lot of people aren't doing it for us, so we're going to do it for ourselves.
That's it.
So a lot of people don't know that most Latinos here in the United States are native born. So as we talk about immigration tonight, let's kind of kill the perception that's going around. If all you did was listen to the media, you would think that most Latinos are immigrants. And that is not only wildly irresponsible on your part, but wildly irresponsible in reporting because it's extremely false. Only roughly one out of three Latinos are actually undocumented immigrants, which means that the majority of U.S. Hispanics actually here, and that's over 66%. Those of you who are wondering, no, we ain't gonna go back because the majority of us are from here.
Exactly.
And that's this week, Something Latino. Ms. Rocky, you have the first artist spotlight.
I sure do. So our first artist spotlight is The Three Pyramids. It's an alternative funk rock musical group that performs with a creative psychedelia, developing an euphoric sound and a strong stage presence. Bernardo, Alexis, Brito, Diego, and Gibran offer a proposal where they revive the essence of classic rock, harmonizing with modern styles. It's a Tijuana project that seeks to communicate the perceived reality through the different eyes. So here's their latest songs, Momento.
Thank you. besarnos y bailar. Vamos a pararnos y bailar.
You got that psychedelia going, huh?
Right? I love that so much.
I'm sitting there. It's like lounge, you know, you're sitting back, relaxing, eating something, chilling out.
And
you
play that so in the background. Relaxed. Yeah. I felt like grabbing a bag of chips and just, you know, tuning out.
I mean, don't use the song as the excuse why you're trying to always grab a bag.
I know. Megan, yeah. Where are you?
You know what? I just opened my eyes up. I just pictured myself on the beach, laying down, listening to the song, just hearing the ocean and the wind in my hair. And so, I'm sorry, I just woke up. But yeah, I really love this song. It was really chill.
Yeah, but it's not that. She was trying to get away with eating a bag of chips. You see, like, you're a health person. Oh.
I was like, how are you?
Megan was all like, yeah, I was just in the beach and
I was so relaxed with the song. I just completely got out of the zone. I'm so sorry about that.
I'm like, save me, Megan. She's on the beach.
All right, guys. And you can follow them on Facebook. That was Three Pyramids. And you can go at Three Pyramids Band. That's on Facebook. And on Instagram, it's at Three Pyramids Musica. Great band. We had them once before, and they turned around and they shared their new single, so that's great. All right, now we're going to talk about a very deep topic that's taking place in the Latino community, because we have mental health awareness and we have men's mental health awareness coming this month. Let's break some stigmas. In honor of mental health awareness, we wanted to briefly talk about some of the reasons why mental health is often like stigmatized in the Latino community. We make up of like 18.3% of all the U.S. population, and over 16% of them have reported some type of mental illness in the past year. That means that over 10 million Latinos have some type of reported mental illness, and a lot of them don't even report it. Now, Bree, you were the one that actually brought this to our attention because you do a lot of mental health awareness. And I know that we've talked about this before, and that there's a perception in our community, especially amongst like the older people for whatever reason.
Yeah.
They have a problem discussing that, right? Like, get that? Like, where a lot of older people have that issue?
Yeah. Yeah. Fortunately, not for our family, that we're a lot more understanding just because of how mental health affected our circle. But yeah, for many, it's seen as embarrassing. It's seen as shameful, or, you know, you need to figure it out. And that's something that I honestly want to break here on the Latin Babbler Show, and letting everyone in the Latino community realize, like, it's okay. If you need to speak to someone, it's okay. If you need treatment, that is okay.
Yeah, and we have a great team here. So, like, for instance, Bree gave us this segment. She was like, hey, you know what? We need to talk about mental health. Megan, who's with us, he deals with a lot of exercise, a lot of people who are trying to lose weight. There's a lot of issues that you've seen concerning mental health, right? As far as when they're going through that struggle. Can you give us a little bit of insight on that?
Yeah, of course. I actually have a personal story. The reason why I started my workout and losing weight, it was because I was actually diagnosed with bipolar 1 disorder.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it wasn't until later on in life that I, like Bree said, I asked for help. I needed help. There was an incident occurred and I didn't know where to go. So I went to a therapist, and you know, we really talked about like what I was going through at the time. And she said, she suggested to get another outlet to express my emotions. And I was just like, well, I love to dance. I love to play sports, but I'm just a little bit older now. So why don't I just go into the fitness and working out realm? And it actually really has helped me with my episodes, because I used to go with like, I had a good one day. I had a bad day right next the next day, and it was just up and down with my emotions. So exercise really helped me control my emotions and release it during the exercises. So yeah, I definitely understand, because for me personally, I've gone through it. I've gone through having a mental health disorder and just seeking another outlet, in which it was exercise for me.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. To be able to use physical fitness training as like an out, kind of push it away. It's like very therapeutic too. Like, even if you're stressed out, exercising will just turn around and just kind of bump you in a whole different direction.
And you know what, Megan, even for sharing your story and for what you're doing, you are so inspiring and brave.
And brave.
Honestly.
Brave. Yeah. Cause a lot of people wouldn't. So thank you for that. That encourages a lot of people out there that listens to us.
Yeah.
I know. Thank you guys. I found you guys via Instagram, cause I wanted to go deeper into my roots. And so I wanted a community to do that. And when I found you guys, I was just like, oh, this is amazing. And now being able to share my journey with my mental health and my fitness journey all together on the show, it's actually a really good opportunity. And I want to thank you guys so much.
Aww. Yo,
aww. Thanks for coming along.
I'm humbled, because, right? She's going to be putting out all kinds of challenges. I'm telling you, some of these are going to be easy and some of these are going to be hard. But when she puts them out, you got to do them.
Yes.
Gotta do it.
And also, exercise is also to help you with your mental health and help you to de-stress when you have a very stressful day.
I agree. We have a pool now.
Yes, I will be soon going over there on that pool. Thank
I'm like an inflatable type of master. People think I'm dead, but I'm not. All right, so Bree gave us like 5 different facts that, because, you know, we love facts here at the show. So we wanted to turn around and kind of hit those when it comes to the Latin community, because a lot of people don't understand what is taking place as to why, for the most part, Latinos aren't going out there and getting the help that they're getting. So number one, Latino community, people are more likely to seek help from a mental health disorder from a... So in other words, they'll go to a doctor, a primary care physician, as opposed to a mental health specialist. which is the wrong person to go to if you're trying to go for mental health. Because the primary care provider is, for the most part, trying to take care of you, you know, your health, making sure that, you know, your well-being is good, your blood pressure is right. A mental health specialist is somebody who actually deals with the psyche of what's going on inside you. There's a big difference. It's like 10% opposed to 5%.
Wow.
That's crazy. Yeah.
That is crazy.
It's a 5%. It's a huge gap. It's almost like half of the other. So it's crazy. So poor communications with health providers is often an issue because of the language barriers. There's like a shortage of bilingual and Spanish-speaking mental health professionals, which is pretty sad considering how many of us are there and how many of us do actually practice the field. So to not be able to reach that help because either the patient has the language barrier or the mental health professional has the language barrier and there's not a lot of people translating in any of these places, that's one. So bilingual patients are evaluated differently when evaluated in English versus Spanish. And that's because more are frequently undertreated than their counterparts. So by that, we mean like, you know, Caucasian families and Latino families are frequently undertreated compared to their Caucasian counterparts. So children use stimulants for ADD, ADHD, and adolescents use depressants at half the rate of those from the Caucasian community, which means that out of all the kids out there, we use half of the resources for our kids than the Caucasians for them. That is insanely bad, really bad. Imagine only getting half the water all the time while everybody drinks it. That's right. Pretty bad.
That is bad.
Mm-hmm. So mental health problems can be hard to identify because we focus on physical, not the psychiatric symptoms during doctor visits. Now, this one, you're going to have, I mean, it's pretty common as to what they're trying to say there, but I'm assuming that somebody goes in there, they're like, oh, I have a headache, or I'm constantly fatigued, or I'm constantly not feeling well, where they may be dealing with something concerning depression or something concerning anxiety or things of that nature. So they're constantly going after the physical. They don't want to kind of deal with the other part, which, okay, there may be something wrong mentally in that area. And lastly, we're actually going to talk about this in the immigration segment. A lot of them are afraid to seek help. And obviously, it's because some Latinos are undocumented. Just even going to these offices gives them even the anxiety to go in there and to try and seek the help because they're afraid of some type of deportation or, you know, report of something of that nature. So that's pretty bad. So knowing all these challenges, we still encourage you to focus on mental health. Got to go in there. And, you know, if you have one of those families who is sitting there saying, hey, there's nothing wrong with you. Look, doesn't hurt to go check. Doesn't hurt to go talk to a mental health specialist.
Yes.
You know, go get the treatment. Even if it's for a session, just to see somebody can, you know, find something that you don't think or maybe your family's not paying attention to. Don't
Absolutely.
Not do it because somebody else says that you're okay and you're this and that. You know what I'm saying? So that's our mental health awareness segment.
Very good. Good
right.
stuff.
It's going to happen throughout the rest of the month because we're going to be sitting there focusing on it, especially with a lot that's going on. For instance, Pride Week started this month.
Woo-woo.
If you want to turn around, hey, for Ooh. All those members of the LGBTQ plus community, we are here with you. We love you. We are an ally.
That's mm-hmm. it.
Come and reach on the Latin Babble Show. We'd love to have you.
Absolutely.
And we'd love to talk with you. I know we have Juan, who's part of that community.
Yes.
Hey, he is amazing. You've seen him. He's funny.
Is.
He's right. And I love his partner. They look so happy.
They do.
Yeah,
they're amazing together.
I look at their Instagram and they just look mad cute.
Yeah, a couple goals. For
right?
sure. Yeah.
No kidding.
Absolutely.
So, yes. But you can imagine the stress that comes with that. In the Latino community, you know, that's kind of like, we're kind of a little bit behind on that.
Right.
Where a lot of people are afraid to come out. A lot of people are afraid to tell their parents, relatives, because of the fact that they're, you know, get backlash in some cases, kicked out of their houses and all kinds. It's a really tough thing to deal with. So there's a lot of different areas that we're going to be touching on this month when it comes to that. So, Ms. Rocky, our second artist spotlight.
So our second artist spotlight is a Puerto Rican singer named Don Sonero. He was born in Río Piedras. So Don Sonero has been one of the most prominent interpreters of the urbano and salsa dura genre. This year, he released another single with a different inspiration, which he wrote entitled Casi Casi Perfecto. Here is Casi Casi Perfecto by Don Sonero.
Dices que fue un ladrón que te robó el corazón, que con palabras bonitas llené tu vida de ilusión, que fui malo contigo, que soy un maldito, que mi amor por ti solo fue un castigo. Lo que pedías yo te daba, te complacía, respiraba. Eso es mentira, tú misma te estás mintiendo. Sabes que mi amor, casi fue perfecto. Sabes que eso es mentira, yo te lo he dado todo. Sabes que mi amor, casi fue perfecto. Para ti más vale el oro que un amor sincero. Para ti más valen las redes sociales que un amor verdadero. Si fue perfecto, sabes que eso es mentira. Yo te lo he dado todo, pero mi todo no era suficiente. Ahora de mí tú mientes.
I can't even stand where I am, but I was dancing.
And sitting in place, they're dancing, huh?
And sitting in place, right? Like a little dog just in there.
I love that, though. Dog.
Yo, that's amazing. Yes. And I love it when we have like Puerto Ricans, Dominicans in the artist spotlight. They always bring it up.
They bring that sabor. Dale. So, guys, we can follow, well, everyone can follow Don Sonero. He's pretty much everywhere. He's on Facebook. He's on Instagram under at Don, that's D-O-N underscore Sonero, S-O-N-E-R-O. So, go ahead and follow.
Yes.
All right, guys. So, now let's go into our special topic of the evening. We're going to be talking celebration. It's a very strong topic. It's a very sensitive topic. But we here at the Latin Bible Show want to make sure that we're providing facts, facts, facts. And so we decided to bring on a special guest on this very important topic that is consistently in the national news. I think it's time to address these issues head on, get some accurate information. Welcome to the show, immigration attorney Danielle Hernandez Paz. How are you?
Hi, how are you guys? I'm doing great. Thank you.
Welcome. Now you are in Florida.
I am all the way in Florida, all the way in Tampa, Florida. Yeah.
Nice.
Tampa.
So I'm
Super Bowl winner, Tampa. Woo.
Yeah, the Bucks.
Mr. Brady's over there.
Tom Brady's Tampa.
I tell you what, I give you props because if you were a Tampa Bay fan all of these years, you definitely deserve the passion.
Definitely.
I agree. And a lot of these people are like hardcore Tampa Bay fans. And yeah, I was a fan of Tampa Bay.
I know. Hey,
I'm a fan of Brady.
I know a friend of mine.
Yeah.
I know a friend of mine who is a huge Tampa Bay fan, and he has gone nuts for that team. And when they got Brady, he called it. He was like, nope, doing Super Bowl. And a lot of people were mocking him and go turn around. Wrong.
You know, that's the first thing I said. I'm like, we got Tom Brady. Wow, we're going to win the Super Bowl. I didn't know that much about football, but I was like, hey, I was right.
Hey, you got the man. You ended up winning with the man, which just goes to show that Tom Brady was a whole lot more important to the Patriots. The Patriots were to Tom Brady.
Yep.
That's right.
He's the GOAT.
All right, so let's get back into this topic since we almost got into sports. So now you specialize in immigration. That's correct, right?
That's right. I'm an attorney. I've been an attorney for 11 years this year, and I solely practice, I would say, family-based immigration law right now. This is my sole focus.
And now what made you choose that career path?
You know, I feel as a Latina, I was born and raised in Miami, Florida. I grew up bilingual. My family is Ecuadorian, and everyone I knew around me had some kind of immigration problem growing up. That being said, I would lie to you guys if I said I knew I always wanted to be an immigration attorney. The opposite. I was like, oh, God, I never want to deal with that.
Right.
But I was like, man, forget it. This is tough. So I think like 4 or 5 years into my career as an attorney, I did a lot of different things. I started as a political analyst. And I got this amazing opportunity to move to California and work for the Department of Homeland Security in Los Angeles. So I started in the toughest immigration court you could find in downtown LA. And that's where I started my immigration path. So they gave me an opportunity. They trained me. So I worked in San Francisco after that and LA. So the first 4 years of my career were as a litigator representing the Department of Homeland Security in immigration court, literally doing deportations, which I thought to myself, can I do this? Can I really do this? I had a sense, I had a come to myself moment, like, can I take this type of job? But after I did, it was done in a way that I could live with myself and in a fair way during that administration. So I learned a lot about immigration. So my thought after I left the government is, hey, I want to turn this experience on its head and use like these, you know, superpowers to help people and to do this on the private side. So I've been a private immigration attorney since 2019, since I left the government. So that is the reason I solely focus on immigration now. And it was kind of, I decided to use the experience that I learned from the government, from the other side, to help my clients now.
Okay, so I'm going to hit on a topic that I know I even ranted about on Instagram one time. So I'm huge on these kids at the border. And I even made a post about it. A lot of people liked me. A lot of people didn't like me. But I'm a little upset because it's now gone through multiple administrations that they've been running this practice. Have you dealt with these type of cases?
I have. And the way that it would come to me when I worked for the government, unfortunately... So they don't tell us, hey, this is the plan. But I knew about it when I worked in the administration. This was floated. I started under the Obama administration and it quickly transitioned to the Trump administration. And this was a practice that we knew would happen. We heard rumors about it. And the way I saw it is, you know, I had to hold trials with unaccompanied minors at times because they came in. and they were sent by their parents. And while so they hear and they're presenting their case now about the whole problem with separating the kids from the parents and that disappearing, that horrible situation, I didn't know anything about that. And I found that appalling. I was hoping that it wasn't true, but you know, facts are facts, and people were separated, kids were separated, and, you know, unification was difficult with their families. And I read sometime last week that there's still about 125 children that haven't been able to locate their families who were returned overseas.
That's crazy. And I'm upset with the conditions, man. I look at these pictures that are out there. You got kids laying on floor, these aluminum blankets, I know where they are because camping and that, but you can't tell them, like,
you know, unfortunately, those I've toured these cells. These are supposed to be turnaround 1 to 2 day holding cells, so to speak. And yes, it is pretty horrible. They are not warm and cushiony. There are no beds in these cells. And unfortunately, from what I've seen in the photos and from what I've read, there's just an influx of kids who are, I've heard and I've seen that the air conditioning in these facilities is very cold. It's meant to like combat the spreading of germs, but most people end up getting sick.
That's
so
crazy.
Yeah, it is. Unfortunately, from there, the process, the way it works is they're only supposed to be there a short period of time. Then they're transitioned into the Office of Refugee Resettlement, which puts some children into more comfortable facilities. But that part isn't, you know, it doesn't make the news. It's not great, but it's a more humane way to hold kids until, you know, they process or reunite with family here in the United States.
That's great. Why do they need to do better? I honestly think, I don't care if they're there for nobody needs to be on a floor.
No, it's
even if it's 24 hours.
Speaking of mental health, you know, we were tying it. I think we had this conversation. Some people come out of this experience very shaken and with some elements of PTSD and some anxiety. And well, there's not a lot of options for them to get treatment here. So,
I mean, why wouldn't you? You see what they're going through in some of these cases. Of course, they're going to come out with that trauma. Like, it's, I don't know. I just think we can do better.
I agree.
So now we talked about, you and I had a conversation offline. We talked about fraud. And for those of you guys who are, look, if you're going through the procedure because you're undocumented or, you know, you have things, you got to be careful, because you had mentioned to me about this fraud that took place even in Florida with people who were getting trusting on this person to try and get their citizenship. And there was a case that you told me about a guy named Elvis Harold Ray, 56, and he ran this ministry called EHR Ministry. He portrayed himself as an immigration attorney, but that wasn't the case, right?
That is correct. So this case was right out of Tampa, Florida. And these are the things I think you and I had in common. This makes my blood boil. When you have a Latino, a Hispanic person who is a pastor of a church, you know, and he literally, as he preyed on undocumented Spanish speaking folks who wanted to legalize their status. These people came to him and they said, hey, I want to get a driver's license. I want to get a work permit. What can I do? Can you help me? And this person, number one, pretended to be an immigration attorney. And number two, he filed thousands of fraudulent petitions and fraudulent asylum applications on behalf of these folks who, by the way, each of these people paid him thousands of dollars. Illegal immigrants who are working, maybe making a couple of dollars an hour. They saved. He charged people anywhere between $2,000 and $6,000. For his services, and they never got any money back. So what ended up happening is, unfortunately, you have, you know, people meet somebody that speaks their language and they feel like they can trust them, which is fantastic. This is another very strong reason why I became an immigration attorney, a private immigration attorney. I'm fully fluent in Spanish and I can connect to my clients very comfortably and they're happy about that. And I didn't know that was a need. I'll pivot back to that. So Reyes would charge the money, file fraudulent applications, and then during that process, of course, the folks would get a green card because it's part of the process. While your dependency of your application, you're entitled to a green card, and with the green card, you can get a license. So everything seemed okay. But what ended up happening is people didn't know they had court dates. The cases didn't line up. They weren't told what, I guess he put a fraudulent information in the asylum applications of incidents that never happened. and people were ordered removed, which means they were ordered deported and they didn't know. And finally, what happened is a big group of these brave, I have to say, brave undocumented folks, they coalesced together and made a lot of noise and find DHS, the local sheriff. This became a very big national case. They started an investigation and prosecuted this man. So that this guy, Elvis Reyes, was convicted and he received 20 years and 9 months in federal prison. Yeah. Well deserved. Life. I have to say, I went outside. You know, we had like protests here in the federal court, and I was so moved by this because you have illegal people going into court and testifying, risking their, you know, safety here to testify in court to make sure this guy has, has his day. That being said, we bring this story up because I feel like Latinos should know. Everyone knows somebody who's going through a process. Please, please, please try to steer clear from notarios and people who are not licensed attorneys. And I actually teach my clients, I say, hey, everyone is supposed to be licensed and they shouldn't have a problem if you ask them, hey, what state are you licensed? For example, I'm licensed in Florida. You can Google Florida Bar and my name and I will pop up. Every state has the ability for you to search if your attorney is licensed. And that's like one of the first things I show my clients, just in case someday I'm not your attorney, hey, this is how you know if someone's a real attorney. I feel like that's very important.
Right.
Like, does every state have an online website where they can do that?
Yes, every state. So you're in California. You can Google California Bar, look up attorney, and you should be able to pop in an attorney's name and they should populate there.
They should populate.
So the trick should be, you know, because immigration law is federal law. I'm barred in Florida, but I practice all over the country because it's federal law. So I don't need like a California license to practice there. Still, I tell clients, hey, it's your right. And then same thing, I coach them. So if your attorney isn't doing their job, there's this other process called filing a bar grievance and a bar complaint. And that gets your attorney's attention very quickly. So there are all these rights that Latinos don't know about and they're afraid to speak up because there's a lot of stories that I hear. Hey, I paid this attorney thousands of dollars and they haven't done anything. Guess what? Like, there are things that you can do. And I really try to teach my clients that. So I know I just babbled a lot, but this is an area I'm very passionate about. And it really grinds my gears.
Absolutely.
I want to make sure that after they listen to this episode, that they are very clear as to what they need to do, at least for in the beginning, or at least the research that they have to make sure that they accomplish before they start going out there. Because we don't want to turn around and say, hey, this is the process to go to. And then they just go to whichever person. I've heard, you know, you were talking about $6,000. I've heard up to like 10 grand in some cases, people paying to try and get, you know, some type of citizenship and this and that. And you have a lot of people going for OS-1 visas and things like that. And you have to be careful who you give your money to.
Yes, absolutely. Especially here in Miami, especially the little city here in Hialeah. There's like these little rinconcitos that that they're just, taking your money. And at the end of the day, nothing's happening. So you got to do your research.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So let's get into the nitty-gritty, because a lot of people don't know what they have to do. So what's the procedure? If I'm in the country and my visa expired, so let's say I got like a worker's visa, which I think is what, 10 years they give for work visa? Could be wrong.
Yes, the H-1Bs.
Okay. That's 10 years, right? Okay, so let's say I got that and for whatever reason, I missed a court date, my visa expired, or I just got here, like some of the undocumented people who are coming across the border or going through. I know you mentioned that there's like a visitor's type of a pass that you can get. What's the process for me to rectify that situation?
So off the bat, there are two very separate processes, right? People who come in with any kind of visa have a completely different immigration experience from people who come in illegally. I say illegally because it's a fact, illegally crossing the border through Rio Grande. Or when I say illegal immigration, I just want to be clear. I mean, by that literally means you didn't present yourself at a port of entry and say, hey, I want to come in to seek asylum, XYZ. These are people who just cross in through the country. And basically, they risk their lives doing that through the desert or through the river. This is a completely different. So if you have a visa, number one thing I would absolutely recommend getting with an immigration attorney who specializes in the type of visa or visas that you have. If you have, for example, a visitor visa, I have done this a lot right now this past year with COVID. My niche is Venezuelans at the moment. who've come in with a visitor visa or other folks, not just Venezuelans, Colombians, a lot of South Americans who still get visas. And they come to me and there's a process and forms that they can fill out to request an extension of your visa so you don't overstay. The reason that's important is because you don't want to be here an unlawful status. When you have unlawful status, that complicates things in down the line. If you get married or if you have access to get a green card through a petition, this time won't count against you. Now, let me pivot to the unlawful entry. This is, I think you guys may hear on the news, there's a big call for immigration reform. The biggest reason for that is these exact people, which we have a large percentage of folks who've come in illegally and don't have a status. Why does that matter? When you come in through the border, it's called entry without inspection. In the short, it's called EWI. When you EWI in, there is almost no way that you can legalize that without leaving the country. So what does that mean? You come in through the border, you have a couple of options. If you have a viable asylum claim, you can talk to an attorney like me and we'll do like an in-depth consultation and I'll ask you the key questions and I'll honestly tell you, hey, it looks like you can petition for an asylum if you've experienced, you know, certain elements of persecution and it's tied to, you know, I'm talking a little bit of legal jargon, but, you know, to...
No, and that's fine because I'm assuming that somebody who's seeking asylum and is qualifying for asylum is because their country is either in like a state of civil war or they're going through some hardship that is not, you're not able to overcome in your own country, right?
That's right. So if you're coming from a country where you have some issues like that, it's not a slam dunk case. This is why I really implore people, don't go to these folks who just fill out your form because they have to be able to make legal arguments to, you know, make you have a fighting chance. So you can try to petition for some asylum, something like that. If that doesn't work, that we're talking about how long it takes. Coming in, asking for asylum, and this whole process can take anywhere between 2 and 3 years. I have people who are still 5 years in and waiting for an interview. Yeah, there's like...
Yeah, and I was about to ask you that, like how long? Crazy.
There is a backlog in about 80% of all immigration cases right now. It is very long. The average case is taking about 5 years. And it should not take this long. It's just very behind.
So what do they do in the meantime? If you're waiting 5 years for this process?
If you're waiting 5 years and you've put in your application, hopefully you're during the pendency of an application that you've submitted the proper way, you can have a work permit. You're entitled to a work permit, which allows you to get a license, which allows you to open a bank account and kind of have a little bit of normalcy in your life. You don't have to live in the shadows. But most people don't do that because they don't, you know, they don't have time, they're afraid, they don't know. And if you just kind of live in the shadows, you just have to hope that you don't, you know, get pulled over by the police or are confronted about your immigration status at some point. So basically, the best thing I would suggest is to talk to somebody, talk to an immigration attorney to assess what your options are, right? There is usually something you can do. And if there isn't, then they should honestly tell you. Some folks come in illegally and they have children here. And then when their child turns over 21, they can file for a petition for their parents. That is another way that that's done. But since you came in illegally, you have to ask for something called a waiver, an I-601 waiver. And that means you have to leave to your country to go actually formalize. Exactly. That's why people don't want to do it. So, okay, that's the reason for reform, because the only way to erase that illegal entry is to leave, do the interview in the consulate or overseas, and then come back in. And that's not 100% promised. Things have gone wrong. I've seen people go over to Mexico, and guess what? It's discretionary. Something happened, something popped up, and they're not allowed back. So it's not the most appealing process at the moment. So that's why there's a big call for a change in the way that the immigration system allows people to come in.
Man, that's crazy. All right. So we have actually Nicole, who is actually one of the people who joined our creative team. I'm going to try to see if we can get her on the call because I know that she is actually going to study immigration. She wants to become an immigration attorney. And I know she had some important questions that she wanted to ask. So let's see if we can get Nicole in. Nicole, are you there?
Yes. Hi.
Hi, Nicole.
So I know, Nicole, you wanted to ask some questions that were important. I know that you've been thinking about them. You've been trying to figure out which questions we're going to probably impact. And based on, you know, your demographic and what are the questions that...
Yeah. So the first question I had was, how does immigration and like the citizenship process differ for adults versus minors or unaccompanied minors, like minors without parents or guardians?
Oh, that's a good question. First of all, I have to pitch and say, please go to law school. I read a statistic today that only 5% of all attorneys are Latinos or Hispanic. And only 2% of attorneys are Latinas. So we are still extremely underrepresented. So please go to law school.
Oh,
yes, definitely. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Go do it.
Yeah, I love when people throw out statistics.
I love it.
Yes, he loves statistics.
This was a Hispanic National Bar Association. And it's odd because we live in cities with a lot of Latinos, right? But we're thinking about the country is very big and there's a big need. So let me get back to your question. So for adults versus minors, the process for minors, one sad reality I touched on it earlier is a lot of people make this ultimate sacrifice, right? They send their child across the border alone because they've heard down in their country that, you know what, they have an opportunity to file, you know, stabilize their process here, and they send them alone. I've had a lot of children who come in alone, and well, this process is a little bit complicated, but there is some good states like California that provide like public assistance to help them through the system. They have to be like deemed an unaccompanied minor. And so there's two ways. The state court has to adjudicate what's called a guardianship. They have to assign them a guardian and they need to issue what's called like a predicate order. Then that comes to immigration, and there's a special application for unaccompanied minors called the I-360. So that comes to court after it's adjudicated by the USCIS, and it comes to someone that used to be like me when there's a visa petition available. So I had a 12-year-old boy before in court all by himself because his visa was up, and he crossed, you know, I heard a story how he crossed, you know, the border, and it was really quite compelling. But the good thing is once there's a visa number, they become they're able to become a permanent resident. So that it's a little bit of it's a different process, and they have some parameters to help them get through the system, but that's the minors part. It's tough. I can't imagine, I'm a mom to a 4-year-old. I can't imagine sending my son alone at any age, you know, across the border.
That's gotta be rough.
Yeah.
That's crushing.
You see the pictures. Sometimes you see the kids like,
I know.
You remember when when they showed the kids and like some of them were like water?
Oh my gosh.
So heartbreaking. I couldn't.
It's tough. So adults, that's the biggest difference. For adults, you have a lot of different, like I said, a lot of different avenues you can assess what you're doing. If you come in as a family, they tend to now, this administration, keep families together. I think we touched on this for a while. They were pulling families apart and putting kids in different places and families in different places. Right now, they're basically releasing them after being, you know, picked up by immigration officers or
like 48 hours
and border patrols.
Right? Like that?
Yeah, about 40. They try to cut them under 48 hours and release them basically into the community or families. I hope that answered your question.
What are the largest changes that you have noticed in the climate of your work when there are extreme ideological changes between administrations? So, for example, like between Trump and Biden right now, do your tasks become more detailed or like more or less difficult and like that kind of thing?
That's a great question because this is my third administration. My third administration, I started the government under the Obama administration. And I think I said this earlier, the way that we did these deportations, I felt were fair. We had what were called priorities, and most of them focused around people with crimes or people who had, you know, committed some type of, you know, broken laws here in the United States. So I felt like I could live with that. And then that transitioned to the administration that came after, the Trump administration, that became tolerant of everyone was a priority. So that made work a lot more difficult because all of a sudden we focused on these people, this subset of people. Now everyone is fair game. And all, I think you guys may or may not know, there's no one set book for all the laws in immigration. It's very fragmented. So memos and rules come out and you have to be on top of everything because all of a sudden there's a memo that came out that said everyone's a priority. And now we hear, for example, now we shifted to the Biden administration. So I'm keeping track of everything Biden has undone. So now we were talking about mental health and Latinos being afraid of going to get help. Well, now I try to let people know they shouldn't be afraid, because what's something that was called the public charge rule, implemented in 2019 by the Trump administration, was rescinded March 9th, 2021. So what does that mean? That means that people aren't going to be penalized for being, let me see, I have a few examples, for using any kind of public assistance, for going to see, look for a doctor, for going to local clinics, for using, you know, food pantries or anything of the sort. It was people were petrified to use any kind of public service at all. For instance, Medicaid, food stamps, any kind of institutional long-term, any Section 8 public housing, all of this was penalized by the former administration. So that being said, these it's like whiplash, right? You don't know. You have to keep track, and it gets
constantly changing. Yeah.
It's constantly changing. So there's not one set way. Immigration law is literally constantly evolving. And right now in the beginning of a new administration, it's even more important to like stay on top of it and see. Just to be quite honest, we're all trying to see what is changing, what is scaling back, what's hopefully we'll see. I think I speak for people who want to see immigration reform. Hopefully we'll see immigration reform of some sort to kind of harmonize all this fragmentation and all this madness, so to speak.
Yeah, I hope it smooths over soon. Thank you so much for answering my questions.
You're welcome.
Danielle and Nicole, ladies and gentlemen.
Yay!
Yay!
I promise you're going to go to law school.
No, Nicole, that's amazing. And just in case you didn't know, she's actually going to be doing a lot of political science articles and a lot of articles on our website, and we're going to be uploading those this week. We will have a article that actually deals with immigration that will coincide with this episode, and you can kind of go and refer to that as we go back and forth into this topic. So it's actually amazing that they are actually tagged. You know, you get somebody trying to go for the field and somebody who's actually in the field and become a lawyer, because that you know, what is it, 2% needs to
2%
increase?
2% of Latinas, yes. 2%. We have to get that number
up. Oh, my goodness. That number needs to skyrocket. Because we were talking last week how, you know, Latino businesses have grown substantially. And the fact that we know that a lot of those businesses are in the service industry, it would be great for us to be able to start tackling on some of these industries that we're in the 2% in.
Right.
That is crazy.
Yeah. That is crazy. So,
that was actually very informative. And I hope a lot of people got some good information, especially if you have friends and families who are going to go through that situation or are currently going through that situation. And I think that a lot of people actually needed to hear this topic. I know it's kind of cliche. People only talk about it in certain ways on different shows. But here we wanted facts, wanted to give you different methods, wanted to make sure that we had a professional so that you can get it from him. So I know that we've been asked a few times on social media to talk about it, so decided to do it. But let's go ahead and have some fun, because a guest has never left this place without being put on the spot. So Danielle, we asked you if you wanted to do Babbler Would You Rather or Two Truths and a Lie, and you chose Two Truths and a Lie. So here we go. For those who don't know, Two Truths and a Lie, she has to give us three stories, and we, the crew, have to figure out which ones are which one is a false story. So why don't you go ahead and give us story number one?
Okay. Story number one. When I was 15 years old, I lived in Grodno, Belarus, for over a month, and I only had access to email one time to email my mother. Ready for number two,
I'm gonna
two,
say
guys?
That's true.
No, I'm and gonna where's say that at? True. Where's Belarus?
Belarus is in the Commonwealth of Independent States. It used to be part of the USSR, and it was liberated in 2000. So what do you guys think?
I'm gonna, you know, we're not gonna give the definite answer, but I think right now I'm aiming for truth on that one, just because of the way it even sounds.
Yeah.
Okay, you ready for my second? Yep. So my second story is I met my husband on a blind date in South Beach, and we got married, and picked up a German European person, and added German to my arsenal of Spanish, Portuguese, and Chinese.
I am going to say that one's probably true.
Yeah,
I'm going to say it's false.
I don't know, man. She talks South Beach. They always doing blind dates in South Beach.
But she's stuttering a lot.
But she's a lawyer, too. She's very confident, you know, and persuading.
I know. Very That's persuasive why I'm just in saying, her. In I heard her a lot of stuttering.
Beginning
I heard
statements
a lot of
here. Yeah.
Did you say stutter?
Yeah. I was hearing a lot of stuttering, like she was thinking about it.
She was thinking about the story. She was trying to just come up with it on the fly. All right. So go ahead. Give us the third one, Janelle.
Okay. The last one is, I have been a political analyst and I had a really cool spy job similar to Ben Affleck in that movie, The Sum of All Fears.
Oh, man. Just threw that one. See, so for me, I have to think that that's the...
I say true.
You think true?
I think number two is the false one.
You think the husband is the false one? I don't know, man. That's kind of an obnoxious story that she gave us at the end.
So. For real. Even the Commonwealth of Russia, Vasha over there.
Vasha.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm totally torn.
I don't think she sent an email from that island. I think, or she got one out. She maybe got one out, but I don't think she had internet there. They were probably still on the line for bread. So I'm not even going to bother with that one. All right, but the husband one, this is South Beach, man. People be doing all kinds of crazy stuff in South Beach. Not to mention, we did mention her name in the beginning of this, which was Daniel Hernandez Paz. So that Paz might just be German. All right, now the story may not be true, but I have a feeling she picked up German.
What do you mean? Paz is also Spanish.
Paz is also Hispanic.
I don't know.
We'll see.
His dad could have been Latino.
But the last one, come on. I mean, she's a secret agent, like spy and all. Watch it be true when I'm over here making it all kinds of big. Why? So Danielle, go ahead. Tell us, which one is the false?
So the false or elements of false is a second story. I don't speak Chinese, but everything else was true. I did marry a German. I met him in South Beach on a blind date. This was like a decade ago. And I do speak fluent German, Spanish, and Portuguese, but no Chinese. I was like, how do I make this kind of BS, but also true?
All right. So I was right.
You were right.
No.
Because of the Chinese, not because of the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, because of the Chinese. I was saying she was stuttering a lot. That's why I was like.
But that's the truth.
I don't care about the other fluff. It's how her voice sounded.
She interrogated her.
That was pretty
she
good.
She sounds like me. Yeah. It's like true, 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 and then a little salty lie.
So wait, the Ben Affleck story is true?
Yes, I started my career as a political analyst for an intelligence agency. Yeah, so I had a really cool work assignment, and it was, you know, it was, if you ever watch that movie, I know it's an oldie, it's literally the type of work I used to do, so I keep that in my little arsenal. I'm like, this was a cool job. So,
we are never playing this game again.
Yeah. Why? Because you're bad at it?
Because we have intelligence officers who are basically creating movies. It's like, how are we going to combat that? You figured out Chinese and you knew the whole story. You thought she didn't meet a German guy. She met a German guy.
I didn't care about the fluff. All I know was that there was some stuttering. And she was very confident when she said that she was a secret agent spy. She said it so confidently.
Yeah, but you said that was a lie, though. The second one was a lie. You said that.
Yeah. The second one was a lie.
So you were right.
I could have done one that was a total lie, but I was like, oh, that's not fun. We do part lie.
So that's the second.
No, the one that's the lie is that one that you chose because of the Chinese, not because she met a German guy, though.
Oh, yep. Okay. Ms. Rocky made it seem like I was wrong.
No, the wrong one is the second one. No, she's right. She figured out which one was a false one. That's the second one.
Yeah, you heard me stutter.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah. Got it.
The only reason she figured it out is because the woman doesn't speak Chinese.
Exactly.
She was in South Beach macking on that German.
Oh my God, it was a blind date.
Look at that.
A blind date. That's crazy.
With a German.
The pause means Easter actually the last name is Dutch, but it's a German. It was a German. You guys seen that Easter egg dye that comes out during Easter? Yes. It wasn't him, but that's where I've seen it.
She's like, it wasn't
him. Might be some royalties. I mean, you never know.
Hey, he's tied into something. All right, señoras y señores, Daniel Hernandez Paz. Well, now we know why. We loved having you here on the show, and the information that you provided was absolutely priceless. You were like such a good sport. Thank you for playing the game. You know, it's kind of like a fixture here. But honestly, completely humbled by you coming here and lending us your expertise so that we can share it with the listeners. And now you have a practice. And what is that practice, and what is the best way for our listeners to reach you if they have a situation that they would like to get professional help from?
First, I would like to say I have clients all over the country, literally from California to DC. My firm has a presence in Miami and DC. I have clients everywhere from Ohio to Texas to you name it. Why? Because I'm fully fluent in Spanish and I really take on what I know that I can do. So my preferred way is going to my website. It's literally Danielle, D-A-N-I-E-L-L-E, V, like Veronica, Hernandez.com. Or you can email me at info@dvhlawyer.com. I'm going to also throw out my office number. It's 813-419-0272. Feel free to reach out. My staff speaks Spanish. Just, you know, give me an email or leave me a voicemail and let me know how I can help.
That's awesome. So people, like, I can't emphasize it enough. You saw the situation that happened with fraudulent type cases. Here is a professional. If you have questions, by all means, let her rip. She can answer them. She can turn around and assist you in them. And, you know, hopefully this turns into something where a lot of people were able to get the help that they need, especially the environment that we're in. And man, great discussion. I really love the fact that you're here.
Thank you guys for having me. This was so fun. And I have to tell you, you know, I found you on Instagram because of your Ecuador episode, and it came up on my feed. I'm Ecuadorian, like I said. So I was like, this awesome. Is so cool. So that's how I connected with you guys. This is awesome. Thank you for having me.
That was a great episode.
It was so good.
It really was. Yeah.
That was such a funny episode. That and Bolivia. Bolivia and that one were like so funny, especially with the whole pink doll.
And thank you for watching. Thank you so much for watching.
Yeah, your support is amazing.
Definitely. Yes, I played it for my mom too. I was like, Mom, listen to this. So that was fun. I had to connect because we're Ecuadorian. I wasn't born there, but been there, and my family came in through Ecuador. So thank you for doing that.
That is
so
awesome. That is
yes.
Actually, Ecuador is one of those places that people kept telling us, hey, you know what? It's never represented. It's never mentioned about, but it's a beautiful country. So we're like, hey, you know what? We're doing all of
them. Yeah.
That is for sure. I was so happy to see it. So thank you for, you have a really awesome podcast. I listen to you while I'm like running in the morning or taking really long walks on here in the Riverwalk.
Aww.
Nice.
Well, that made That's my awesome. Day.
That's so sweet. Thank you.
Thank you
see,
so
now
much.
She's going to have Thanks, even more, guys. More stuff to do because you got Megan's new challenge. So we mentioned already, we have a new member, and that member joined this team this past week. And she came on to help with health and fitness, physical fitness, ladies and gentlemen. So each week, we will be doing some fun challenges for you guys to do. And this week's challenge is, go ahead and take it away.
Hi, yeah. So we're going to do a hydration challenge to take in 120 ounces daily. It could be mostly water, but coffee, tea, and smoothie is acceptable. And then we also going to do like a daily, weekly question about like what brings joy into your life and how you can incorporate it into your daily routines.
So we're going to actually post those on the website, and we're going to go post those on all social media. And if you haven't joined the Facebook group, now's a good time to do it because we're doing all of these. You'll be posting some videos. We'll be posting some articles on health and fitness. So the challenge now, you said 100, I mean, kind of limit, didn't limit. It's coffee, tea, or a smoothie. Can I have a smoothie of like donuts?
No, we will. I want you to be able to take in all your fruits and veggies and all that good stuff. So I would love for you guys to mostly have the water intake. But, you know, sometimes people get tired of water. So coffee, a green juice, or strawberries and bananas with kale.
Put some lemon smoothie. In that water.
And put some lemon, kiwi,
yeah.
strawberries,
so good.
Blueberries, pomegranate, whatever fruit that you favor and just want to spice your water up, you can definitely add that into it.
My nutrition coach has me putting cucumbers and lemon inside the water. I can't
so
stand
good.
It, by the way. It's refreshing as hell, but I can't
it
stand
is.
Drinking water all.
So good.
It bothers me.
So good. You'll get used to it. Keep so, at it. You'll get
I
used
saw,
to it.
I saw Megan yes. doing the 100 kick challenge. I saw you.
Oh, yeah.
You're actually the one that forced me to do it.
That is actually so much fun. I do it before I work out. So it definitely pumps me up and gets me ready to start doing a 30 or 40 minute exercise. So it's so much fun.
When I did it, it didn't look like I was doing kicks, though. It looked like I was just dancing. Feet weren't going off. Like, kind of funny. Then Kung I had the manga.
That was you. I love this.
All right, guys. Well, that's our show for today. Remember that you can reach us everywhere. If you look up Latin Babbler Show, you're going to find us at Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. It doesn't matter where you go. You're going to find us. We're on all podcast apps. So if you want to listen to us, you can go ahead and go there. We ask you at Latin Babbler Show. That's where we are everywhere you go. So visit the website, www.latinbabbler.com, and the Facebook group. Type in Latin Babbler Show on the Facebook, and you'll see that the group pops up right off the bat. So that is our show. And thank you for joining us. The crew can sign out.
Woo-woo! Woo! Bye, guys!
Thanks for watching!
Bye!